So we're going to take a look at a physical exam form. And this is a form that's a PDF file that's available to you to use to copy and give to your client and be able to actually assess what's going on from a physical perspective. And we're going to go through this, and I'll talk to you about how you can turn that over to your client and how you can actually use it yourself. So before we begin, let's just make sure that you're aware that any of the information I'm presenting here is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it's also not medical advice. And when you're presenting to your clients, you need to be really careful and make sure that they are aware that what you're presenting and what I'm presenting here today is intended as a sharing of my knowledge, information, clinical research, and clinical experience over many years. I encourage you, and you should encourage your clients, to make their own healthcare decisions based upon your research and in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. This is especially true for folks who are on any medications. Just want to make sure that the things that we talk about in terms of nutrition are not going to interfere with the protocols. This is a form set up so that you can give it to a person and have them fill it out for you, or you can take it and fill it out for them as you're doing the exam. You put their name and the date. Always want to get a person's height and weight, just because it's a great way to start out. You know how tall they are, you know what they should be weighing, and you can follow them through and do periodic check-ins and watch as their weight is changing. Their frame size is important to know, because a small person is going to weigh less, obviously, than a large boned person. And a good way to know the frame size is to take your finger, your thumb and your first finger, and wrap it around their wrist, or have them wrap their thumb and forefinger around their wrist is actually a better way to do it. But you'll kind of get a sense from yourself as to when you've done many, whether they're small, medium, and large, based on how you can wrap around. But you have them take their thumb and their forefinger, wrap it around their wrist. If those fingers overlap, they're definitely a small frame. If those fingers come in kind of almost touch or touch at the tips, they're medium. And if there's a gap between where the thumb and the forefinger end on the wrist, then they would be a large frame. So it's a kind of a rough estimate, and you can usually tell by their shoulder girth and all. But the wrist just seems to be a really easy way to know. So the next thing you want to do is count their number of respirations. So if you're with the person, they're sitting across from you, you can just tell them to breathe naturally and just watch and count using your timer how many times their chest expands and contracts within a minute. So the next thing we'll look at is taking the pulse. The pulse is measured in beats per minute. You've probably taken a pulse before, but I figured I'd just walk you through the correct way to do it, and to also so that you understand how to explain it to your people if you're having someone do it. So here's a picture of various ways of taking the pulse. There's really just two ways. One is on the wrist, which is called the radial pulse, and the other is in the neck, which is called the carotid pulse. When you're doing a radial pulse, you take two fingers of the opposite hand and you place them alongside the wrist, right at the thumb side, and you wait. And you wait till you feel the pulse. Don't use your thumb. Always use your other fingers, because your thumb has a pulse of its own. And you'll feel the pulse and then look at your watch. I usually like to start on an even integral, you know, a half minute or a minute. And then I usually like to count for 15 seconds. Sometimes I'll count for 30. Sometimes I'll count for the full minute. It depends on who I'm dealing with and whether they have some known cardiovascular things, or if I've taken their pulse and it feels somewhat irregular, then I'll want to go for the full minute and get a sense of how many beats per minute they have. So you see two different pictures of how to do the radial pulse. And then we'll take a look at the carotid pulse. So if you're doing it on someone, you see the hand coming out, you're taking the last two fingers and you're placing them on. It doesn't really matter which fingers you use. You can use your thumb and your middle finger. You could see that it's approximately an inch below the jawline, maybe up to an inch and a half, and then it's just lateral to the midline where you feel the bones, the thyroid cartilage and all that. So you'll feel it. More you practice it on yourself if you're going to be doing it on someone else. Be really comfortable explaining to someone how to do it. Okay? And there's just two different pictures there. One of a doctor doing it to a person, and then the other one is how to do it on yourself. So let's continue. And then temperature, you can have the person take their temperature. You can use a digital thermometer, but I find that the digital thermometers are not quite as accurate as the old-fashioned kind. The old-fashioned kind are no longer made with mercury. They're made with another kind of metal, but they're the same idea where there's a chamber, and when you put it under the person's tongue, the metal moves up and stops at the temperature that's calibrated to the body. Next, we're going to look at blood pressure. We're going to be doing blood pressure in a functional way. We're going to be doing it seated, supine, which is lying face up, and also standing. Now, there's a number of ways that you can do blood pressure. If you're seeing the person in your office and you have a medical practice, or you've been working in a medical practice, you know how to take blood pressure, you will do it in the old-fashioned way, which is using the stethoscope, the cuff around, you pump and inflate the cuff, and you look at the little monitor. And it's usually a manual monitor. It's not digital. It just is a needle that moves up and takes the blood pressure. If you've never done that before, it does take some practice, and you want to learn how to do it. If you've never done it before, then go ahead and get one of these automatic types. You can either do a wrist cuff or an arm cuff. Now, the wrist cuff, some people say they're not as accurate, and they are off a little bit, but they're close enough. But really, if you're doing it yourself in an office, you want to do either the old-fashioned SIG or the arm cuff. But if you make sure that when they're doing the wrist cuff, that they hold their hand over their heart, and there's usually a little arrow on the unit that tells them where to hold it over the heart, and it's a little like a heart monitor, because that's how it's reading. It's reading the heartbeat and then detecting the pressure in the cuff. So let's talk about the ways that we do this functionally. In a typical medical conventional setting, blood pressure is just done seated. It's usually done in just one arm. However, I like to do it in two arms to see if there's a difference, especially in an older person or a person with known cardiovascular issues, but it is just a good screening tool. If there's a difference in the blood pressure between the left and the right that's greater than 10 points, top or bottom number, that could indicate that there's a blockage or some sluggishness in the cardiovascular system somewhere, and it's something that would need to be further investigated. So you have them seated with their legs uncrossed, and you go ahead and you measure the left and the right arm, and you jot them down in the little spaces here. So the next thing you want to do is have them lying down face up, which is called the supine position, and get them relaxed and then measure their blood pressure. It is generally going to be less than the seated, usually in the range of 10 points. It could be more or less depending on the person. Once you've measured it lying face up, then you want to measure it standing up. But here's the trick. You want to get your immediately upon arising. The reason it's important to take the blood pressure immediately upon arising from lying down to standing is so that you can capture the response of the sympathetic nervous system. That's indeed what we're measuring with this, which is an indirect measurement of the health of the adrenal glands. So immediately upon rising, generally what I do is I'll inflate the cuff while they're still lying down, then I ask them to stand, and then I click it on and take the measurement once they're standing up. If the blood pressure does what it should when they stand up, which is to increase, at least the top number, which is called the systolic, goes up by 10, then you're done. If it doesn't, if the systolic either stays the same standing from lying, or it goes down, then it's a suggestion that there's some adrenal stress, and what we want you to do is then time it and take it again in another minute, and just keep taking it every minute up till 5 until it either increases by 10 points, from the lying down measurement, or you've reached 5 minutes. If they've reached 5 minutes and they're still not back to where they were when they were lying down, that's suggestive of some severe adrenal distress or some sympathetic nervous system impairment, that the sympathetics are not able to respond. And that's usually a sign of adrenal fatigue. So you're basically jotting those down and writing them. It's approximate 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute, 4 minute, 5 minute. If you're off by a few seconds here or there, no worries. So that's a summary of how to take a functional blood pressure. You can do this with a person and practice it a few times till you get good at it, or you can explain it to the person or give them this paper to fill in and have them work with someone who can help them to do it. It's not that hard when you use one of the automatic cuffs. After we've taken the blood pressure, we're going to take some measurements. And these are things that you can teach people, instruct people to do on their own at home. Even if you are seeing them in the office, sometimes you may not have that much time in the office, but as you're getting used to this, it's probably not a bad idea for you to practice. Again, it depends on your licensure, whether you really are allowed to be doing measurements. I mean, I think most people can do measurements on others, like a massage therapist, you've got a license to be able to touch people, personal trainer would have that, and of course a chiropractor, MD, acupuncturist could all do these measurements if it seems appropriate. If you're working with somebody on weight loss or fitness or increasing their strength and stamina, changing insulin resistance, working on the effects of stress, then getting these measurements before and after are very, very helpful. So I've got this picture, the neck, you're going right across the neck, the chest, you're going to measure across at nipple length, the arm, you're going right around the middle of the arm, the waist is right at belly button, the arrow's just slightly off, I had a hard time getting it aligned, but it's right about belly button level. The wrist, of course, is at the bony part of the wrist. The hip is where the trochanters meet. That's the outer part, those little kind of bony protrusions at the end. That's where the hip is. And then the thigh would be midway down the thigh. And you can see there's a spot on your chart for you to write this in. And again, I've got a reminder of where the spots are. And it's good for having for people too, that they could know exactly where. And obviously, if you're doing extremities, you are going to do the left and the right, chest and neck and waist, etc., is going to be just the one, obviously. But for the hip and the waist, what you want to do is get the waist-hip ratio. And the waist-hip ratio is used as an indicator of excess belly fat and can be definitely a measurement in insulin resistance. When you have insulin resistance, what you're going to see is that the waist-hip ratio increases. That the waist, in a female, you know, with that ideal perfect figure, there's a 10-inch difference between the waist and the hip, right? But most people don't have that. And there's usually 80%. You want the waist to be no more than 80% of the hips in a female and no more than equal in a male. And obviously that's at the higher end of normal. For ideal, you want to be less than that.